Okay. First of all, mazel tov to everyone. I've seen, I guess it was always since your engagement, but is he like running around? He's like, it's not just exciting for you, but I guess for the yeshiva that have watched all of you for the last X amount of years and grown and developed and now sort of head into this next stage of life and to really have seen how beautifully all of you have done in life and now to see you sort of see you go in this next step, it's tremendous nachas for me and the yeshiva really sort of shares in that simcha. Thank you, Peter. So I just wanted to even share just a few thoughts about engagement. As you've already discovered, it's something of a ride. It's only a few days now, but it's definitely a complicated stage of life. There's a lot to think about. There's a lot that's going on. And just want to share just a few brief thoughts. There's a lot more to say, but sort of as a starting point for some of these conversations. Just say in a general sense, I think it's something that... I think in a general sense, something that people are very conscious of is that sometimes, not that you've experienced this already in your engagement, I'm sure that many of you have had going out periods or very smooth engagements that have been very smooth. Other people not that way. Other people going out is very, very rocky, and there's a certain amount of up and down, and the engagement's very rocky, and the whole process becomes something which is somewhat anxiety-filled. But just to, I guess, be mechazik, all of you, whether it's been smooth or rocky or somewhere in between, just really about the beautiful process of creating shalom over a lifetime. But everyone knows the famous Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara says that a person is allowed to lie for the purpose of shalom. And we know the Midrashim that tell us, of course, that Hashem Baruch Hu allowed his name to be mochek for the purpose of shalom. The example of lying for the purpose of shalom, or I guess the greatest paradigm of that, of course, everyone knows from the parasha in 2 weeks, is that Hashem Baruch Hu lied, that Sarah said, that Adoni Zaken, my husband is told to have children. And then Hashem Baruch Hu says that Sarah said that she's told to have children. The Ramban points out, the Sichas Mosar points out, it's such like an amazing Gemara. Right? You know, Avram and Sarah have been married for so many years already, they were so close already. Hashem Baruch Hu had to lie to protect Avram Avinu. But the reality is that to create like a marriage of shalom over the course of a lifetime, A, is so significant, but it's so challenging that even to some degree, like a Kadosh Baruch Hu had to be involved. Right? That Kadosh Baruch Hu, even the smallest amount of shalom between Avram and Sarah was so significant that Kadosh Baruch Hu had to be involved. The Mefarshim point out, the Baal Musar point out, that if it's something that needs a Kadosh Baruch Hu's involvement, then it's not something which is simple, it's not something which is minor. You know, a minor chesed, anybody can go to, no offense, anybody can go to Hask, anybody can volunteer to go to Nicaragua, anybody can do something which is somewhat easy, right? But to really have something that's meaningful is often a lifetime. And to really meaningfully develop a life of shalom and a life of connection and a life of a depth of connection and a life where sort of two different people really become almost like one entity and they feel that closeness and they feel this unbelievable union between two people. That's a lifetime of avoda. Baruch Hashem, I've been zocha to be married for 18 years and a wonderful marriage to a wonderful person. But it's sort of a katzna avoda, how to create sort of that symbiosis, that oneness, how to create a marriage where your first priority is giving, where your first priority is the other person, where the other person's happiness is more important than yours. It's a lifetime of avodah, and anything meaningful in life is a lifetime of avodah, and I just want to just sort of frame it in those terms. It's not like, you know, if I do this, I'll be a good husband, or for Sean Bias, I need to do that. It's like, it's an avodah that encompasses every piece of your life, and your home, and it's your entire life is like that. But there's nothing, there's no greater star, there's no greater reward than having a home that just sort of oozes a simcha. You ever go to people's homes before where you're just in their house and there's just like a sense of like a husband and wife who just, they just love each other, they're looking around each other. you ever see either in your own parents, other parents, like husbands and wives, they love going on walks together, they love being together, they love speaking, their family is a place of simcha, their home radiates that. That only comes from like a lifetime of avodah, and obviously want to be mechazik you in that. That's sort of prat number one. The prat number two is something that I mentioned to Menachem and some other people as well. It's a very, very famous story of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. There's all these great stories of Rav Yaakov and his children. So I'll tell you one story, not necessarily related to what you guys are going through in life now, but it's a great story. I know all of you well enough to know that some of your children are going to be complete maniacs, which is not a bad thing. It's like Rav Yaakov's revenge for years of, you know, terrorizing your parents. And then, so Rav Yaakov himself was a very like laboric person, and his kids are still sort of very like laboric personalities. The Kamenetskys are not the sort of people with that personality. I say like Rav Yaakov's greatness. So he goes, I think when Shmuel's kids were very young, they were very wild. Ever go to like any Rebbe's house in Eretz Yisrael where like, you know, this kid's on the table, this kid's naked, this kid's this. Like, my house is like that. Still is a little bit. And then it was like the whole Shabbos was going on like this. You know, this kid was fighting that kid, and that kid is biting that kid. And then so Shmuel apologized to Rav Yaakov after Shabbos, and he said, Tati, I'm so sorry, Tzar Gidol Banim. It's such a great line. Rav Yaakov said, I never want to hear you say that. He said, it's Gidol Banim. If you view it as tsar, it'll feel like tsar. If you view it as this is life and this is normal and they're kids, and okay, so then you'll approach your life totally differently. Like if you view it as tsar balicha, tsar gidol banim, it's gonna feel like that. So along the same line, so Shmuel came to Rav Yaakov when he was gonna be a father for the first time, and he asked Rav Yaakov. He said, "Do you have any advice for being a parent?" And so Rav Yaakov said, you asked me for advice for being a parent now at age, you know, 24, 25. He said, the advice of being a good parent is by living your life for the last 20 years as a Baal Midos. Right? It's not like I'm going to become a parent now. Like, you know, do you have an eitzah for being a parent? The eitzah for being a parent is like 20 years of working on yourself and 20 years of being patient and 20 years of being giving and, you know, 20 years of Mesiras Nefesh. It's not like I'll give you an eitzah. The eitzah is like, who have you been in your life until now? If that's true by parenting, it's even more true when it comes to marriage as well. You know, sometimes a person will read like a book on Shalom Bayis, and I'm not discounting, you know, anything that books have to say or Sfarim have to say or Chasen Shmuzim. But the reality is, like, a marriage boils down to the quality of the midos of the people in the marriage. It's not just about like an eitzah. You know, should I learn night seder in the apartment or not apartment? Should I this? Like, should I? I wouldn't say that's sort of stupid stuff, but that's like sort of like the icing, the superficial issues of a marriage. You know, the real question is like, am I entering into a marriage with the midos that I need to be like a great husband? In many cases, hopefully in most cases, the answer is absolutely yes. And now it's just sort of like a matter of, you know, making the marriage work. But I would definitely challenge you or ask you, as you're sort of thinking about getting married, so what are the areas of my life that I know can create issues sort of down the road? You know, where are the areas in my life that I really need to tackle, I need to be involved in, that if I don't deal with them, they're going to sort of rear its head in marriage down the road. You know, if you have a person who's too insecure, a person who needs constant sort of feedback and constant, you know, support, and they're needy, and then, you know, that's an area of a person's life that comes to marriage. The person puts a tremendous burden on their wife, and there's a constant neediness, and there's a constant need for confidence, and that's an area that in many marriages sort of drags down the woman and drags down the relationship. And that's an area to think about now. You know, what a many marriages, a person has an issue with the temper. And a person knows that beforehand. They feel they lash out at parents or at siblings or at other people. It destroys marriages. It destroys homes. The woman feels sort of berated. It's something often that a guy will not show a girl when they're engaged but then all of a sudden in marriage it comes out then. Like, what are the areas of life now that a person really needs to tackle, a person really needs to address, a person really needs to balance themselves out so they can become like an amazing husband or amazing wife down the road? And to really sort of think now, what are the areas of my life where there is an imbalance areas of my life where I really need to work on now, not to sort of only be worried about, okay, who's taking care of the insurance, and when are the beds arriving, and where are we living, am I on the list for the YU apartments, and how am I going to make a money? I mean, like, those are important questions also, but they pale in comparison to the real issue of, like, do I have the basic temperament, personality, midos to be sort of functioning properly in the course of marriage? One point, maybe it is two specific issues that perhaps are the biggest areas of adjustment in a marriage. There's many, many issues, but two specific issues just to sort of even think about now, especially if they've come up already in the course of relationships. You know, if any of you or all of you have had easy engagements or going out periods of time, you know, that's great, you know. But to some degree, that becomes a greater challenge. Everyone's living here in the Heights, one-bedroom apartments, studio apartments. Okay, you know, just speaking for myself and for others, you know, you get, when you're going out with someone and they're in their house in, you know, Woodmere, and you're wherever you are in Cleveland or Hillcrest, wherever, you know, and then, like, you get together, and then, like, okay, things can sort of be calm because everything's from a distance. You know, when you're living with a person in a one-bedroom apartment or a studio apartment, and you know, which becomes the biggest sorts of issue, and she's like very messy around the house, which sounds like a stupid thing, but this becomes like the major issue of he's leaving his socks on the floor. And I mean, I don't know why the socks on the floor, it's like a Masorah there for thousands of years, guys leaving socks on the floor become like the major issue. And but it's really reflective in general of, like, you have to make a marriage work with this person, you know, and maybe she's just her laugh bothers you, and he bothers me because of that, and then you're sort of like on top of each other a little bit, and you're together all the time, and you're always together in Shabbos, and maybe you don't have tons of guests over, and then, you know, how to sort of like make that work when you're sort of like on top of each other, when you're sort of living together, and you're always together, and like there's nowhere to go. You can't like tell your wife, okay, I'm gonna go, you know, like hang out with the guys, and like, you know, I'll be back tomorrow, or like, you know, these things sort of like you have to make it work in a somewhat closed quarters in a way that is, you know, somewhat different than anything you've experienced before. It's like, you know, it's like you ever have like a roommate who you learned with and you also live with and you're also like summers with, and like at a certain point, like things start to, you know, create friction. And sometimes when that's the case, there's sort of several different issues that come up. Let me just maybe mention two of them. You know, one issue, you may already discover this, you know, issues of how to criticize a person, right? In certain relationships, there's never a need to criticize. You know, other relationships, you know, there's a constant feeling that the person's pointing something out and the person's being critical. And then when they criticize, they're criticizing at 2 o'clock in the morning at the wrong times. And then there's like a certain edge in a person's voice. And then, like, how to really find out how to have an argument, a disagreement, how to criticize, what's worth criticizing, what's not worth criticizing. When we have a conversation like that, are we sitting on a couch sort of in a warm type of way, or am I calling from a phone and she's in a bad mood? And sort of how to go about arguing, criticizing, pointing something out, when something should be pointed out, when is it worth to saying, forget it, it's not worth it. Like, these are issues that often take years in a relationship of how to sort of go about that. You know, some people, when they're in an argument, I don't know if you guys have any major arguments with your kalos already. So some people have a mahalach where they close down. You know, they're upset for 2 days later, 3 days later, they still don't want to talk, they're giving the silent treatment, or, you know, other people they want to talk with. I mean, and how to sort of like work these issues out and navigate these issues are crucial beyond crucial, because if you never feel that you can really express something and be heard, and she can't feel that, and every issue becomes blown up, and then the relationship will not go anywhere. And how to be able to sort of communicate in a way that is healthy and meaningful, appropriate, but not too much, the right timing, the right tone of voice, all of those things. Those are issues that they haven't come up, certainly will come up over the course of your marriage. The second issue as well, and just want to maybe mention a couple other things, I know people have to be on their way already, is an issue that really takes a lifetime. And I'm embarrassed to say that it's something that I was very poor at probably for the first year of my marriage, and that is looking at a person's kala, looking at a person's wife, and just completely being makshiv who that person is. Yeah. There's no greater simcha in life than when you look at the person you're married to and you feel like, I'm like the luckiest person in the world. Not to sound like some cheesy Hallmark card, or like I am so amazed of the person that I'm engaged to, and I'm so lucky to be engaged to that person or married to that person. I'm so lucky that this person is the mother of my children and the person I'll be spending the next 50, 60, 70 years with. You know, so often you get married to a person and almost the first response, something that Rav Dessler said is the key midah in life, is what's your first reaction to a person? So my first reaction to a person, like, wow, like, you're amazing, and this he served the Tov, was your first reaction somehow critical? And especially when a person is living in Washington Heights or Queens or wherever they're living, and they see maybe their friend's wife who maybe presents themselves better, maybe they're a better cook, maybe their house is neater, maybe that at a Shabbos table there's, you know, they're adding to conversations in a certain way, there's a depth or a depth of learning. And then you say, my wife, well, what does she do? She's at home, she's not making great use of her time, how come she's not learning more, how come she's not that more, you know, she's dead, like, how come she talks to her mother three times a day? I mean, like, all these sort of things that come up where then the first reaction is to really be machshu the person less than, A, what the person deserves, and less than what's healthy in the relationship. And that often comes with the lack of ability to sort of look at yourself and say, well, you know what, I'm not the greatest package also, and there's probably a million things about me that my wife wishes were different, and those things don't register. What registers sometimes is just sort of the negativity and the frustration or the criticism. And if that's something that's not addressed, there's like no simcha in a relationship. When a person lives where every person, each one of the members' relationship looks at their spouse and says, like, I'm just so lucky to be married to this person. I'll tell you two beautiful stories about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. You probably have heard them already, but just mention again. Rav Shlomo Zalman was meeting with someone in his apartment in Shaarei Chesed. You hear a story like this, it speaks so much about Rav Shlomo Zalman, and it also sets a course for all of us in our own relationships. He was meeting with someone in his apartment, Shaarei Chesed, and all of a sudden, Shlomo Zalman looked out the window and he started like putting the shack together and doing his tamid mor tai, but he started like getting himself fixed up. The person was a little bit, like, I guess, taken aback. You know, he's standing up, he's doing up his jacket. So Shlomo Zalman said that when you have a home of shalom between ish v'ishto, the Shechina resides in that home, that a person's wife sort of brings the Shechina into the home. He said, I see my wife walking in the house, and when she's in the house, I feel that sense of Shechina. I feel that sense of the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the Shechina is here. Like, I need to sort of prepare myself properly. And every time she would walk in the house, he would do that. He would make sure he was dressed appropriately. He felt like such a sense of what she brought to his life. Every single time, that's the way Shlomo Zalman told people. He would make himself, he was presentable for her, because he felt that presence when she was in the house. When she was Nifteres before him. Shlomo Zalman was Nifter, what, at 94, 95? People, you're too young to remember, but so she was Nifteres before him, and they asked Shlomo Zalman, I don't know, it's something, an interesting question, the Tamidim asked the Rebbe, said, did you ask Mechila to your wife before she was Nifteres? You ever hear this story before? So he said, I actually did not. He said, I went through my life every single day recognizing how exceptional she was, how lucky that I was. And as a result, like, I can never find myself like being harsh to her. I can never find myself being critical of her, because every single day, like, I just realized who I was living with. I was like living with like a living Sefer Torah. And he said, not that I was perfect, but that was the type of relationship we had. I looked at her and I had that sense. I tell a story about Shlomo Hyman, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vadas. Shlomo Hyman was Nifter in the 50s. And when the boys came to Menachem Avil, to the Rebbetzin got the entire yeshiva together and said, I want to tell you about what it means to be a husband. She said, my husband was very busy, he was running yeshiva. He would come home every single night for dinner, and he would talk to me about his day, and he would tell me about some of the tshuvas he was writing. You know, so Akiv Eger used to read over his tshuvas to his wife before he would print them. I mean, she was a very exceptional person. And she was Nifteres at a very young age. Years later, a decade later, they suggested another shidduch to Akiv Eger. He said, it's too soon. He said, I can't do it. He said, he was so, like, there was such like a love between him and his son. So he ended up getting remarried eventually. But so Rebbetzin Hyman said that he would come home, he'd tell me about his day, he was going to yeshiva. He said, every night I would go out to do fundraising when the kids were older for different organizations in Brooklyn. And I'd come home every single night at 10:30. He was back from the base medrash. he had, there's a piece of cake for me caught on the table, there was the hot water in the kettle, he had made the bed for me, he turned down the sheets every single night for 2 decades. That's what the Rosh Yeshiva did. And I went to him and I said, you know, for the Rosh Yeshiva coming home and making tea and turning, he said, there's nothing more significant in my life than this, than these moments between us, and if I'm anything in life, it's because of those moments. When a person has like that mindset and they look at their wife and they feel that way, and that's sort of the first, second, and third reaction to a person, it's a totally different home. It's like a totally different life. And that's like a chinuch already now that has to start now, not like a year from now, but even now, even when you call her tonight or whatever the case is. What I made mention sort of two specific nekudos that guys often sort of speak about or question about. So I mentioned this again, the idea of shalom being something that creates over a course of a lifetime. The sort of Yaakov Kamenetsky, that preparation for fatherhood, for marriage, is all about sort of the person you've been, and to make sure you work on areas of your life, whether it be insecurity or anger or anything else, that you want to work on that now. Two specific issues that come up in Shana Rishona as far as communication and also sort of being machshiv about the other person. There's two specific issues as for engagement. I think many of you are zocha to have great relationships with not just your kala, but with your future in-laws, and hopefully your kala, with your parents. Hopefully you're zocha for that, and I'm sure some of you are not necessarily zocha for that, and then there's different issues that come up along the way. It's great when you get along great with her brother, which Gemara discussed in Suvos, and her parents. It doesn't, again, that picture is not always there. And sometimes there can be sort of small tensions in engagement, where a kala feels as though a guy naturally is taking the side of his mother. You know, the mother has one vision, the kala has a different vision, there might be machlokas between families, and then it's very natural if someone's 22, 23 years old, they've been living with their mother, their parents, their whole life, to sort of like take hatzlacha, to take the side of their own parents, to feel as though a person's defending their own parents. These are very complicated issues, but the first priority has to be, what does my wife want? What does my kala want? What's she feeling? Not to make her feel at all sort of insecure or inadequate, or that she wants something wrong. And obviously these have to be worked out in very sensitive ways, parental issues and family issues. But the first priority has to be that even though my whole life until now has been my family, but my priority really has to be my wife and her needs. And that's during Shana Rishona also. You know, at a certain point, your parents may want you to come over a tremendous amount and always be around, and she feels that it's too much. The first priority always has to be sort of the support of a fiancé, of a kala, of a wife. And that, again, becomes a complicated issue during engagement. Another complicated issue, and I hope that it's not been too difficult for all of you, but it's natural for would-be, is that sort of some of the issues that relate to separation, harchakos, yichud, like all of those types of things that tend to sort of just develop and grow as time goes on during the course of going out and engagement. And there's a specific nichshol that I believe exists in engagement more so than a person is going out. When a person is going out, you know, the relationship itself sort of takes on momentum. It's building, it's moving forward, people get engaged. And then you get engaged, and you're engaged for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. You know, the relationship's really not going anywhere. And sometimes certain couples, sort of that void is filled by sort of allowing themselves to fall into the trap of physical connection. You know, that somehow that becomes like the means of connection, where perhaps the emotional connection is not there in the same way during engagement. It's something that really in many ways destroys the feeling about the relationship. You know, especially everyone in this room, a couple has a sense we're building a bayis kedusha, we're building something special, we're building a relation with kedusha, and then all of a sudden, you know, a couple's nichshol, they look at each other differently, they feel differently about the relationship, it causes a certain sense of depression, people go under the chuppah, you know, with sort of that already hanging over them. If you haven't experienced it, which I hope you haven't, but if you have, so I think you probably know a little of what I speak, and I would just sort of really be mechazik people, especially during this period of time, even the closer to the wedding, even the more so that there is even more of a challenge, is to really not even sort of enter into a situation where there's even sort of a possibility of people not being at their best. If the person's in that situation, the Gemara tells us that sort of the Satan is overwhelming, the Yetzer is overwhelming, and to really sort of make decisions now over the course of the next month, 2 months, 3 months, of how we can sort of really create a real sense of Kedusha between us and how to sort of take steps towards that as well. Well, I wish you guys a tremendous bracha, and that bracha is something that isn't just for the next month or two, but it's really for your entire life. If you step back a little bit from sort of the technical aspects of engagement and marriage and sometimes like the day-to-day and however busy all of you are now, I know that all of you are very busy, it's 20 times more in 10 years from now. You know, trying to orchestrate four carpools, trying to make a living and trying to keep the house clean and trying to find time to learn and davening at 5:30 in the morning and going to work. I mean, all the... And still trying to find time to connect with your spouses and... It becomes overwhelming just sort of managing life a little bit. And I want to give you really two brachos. You know, the first bracha is that if a person has in their mindset that the thing that's really going to make me happy in life is the nuclear part of my life, my wife, my children, my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, my contribution to the world. If I can focus on that, I mean, if a person ever loses sight of that, and all of a sudden their life is about 1,000 other things, and their priorities about 1,000 other things, a person loses their way in the world. But the focus is that if I have a great marriage, if I'm a great father, I have close friends, I'm close to Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's all that a person needs in this world. Money will come, money will go, health will come, health will go. A person has those few things that create that foundation in a person's life. It's bracha number one. And bracha number two is that over the course, as I said, of this engagement, to really step back and feel an enormous sense of Shefa v'Kadosh Baruch Hu. To all of you are where you are in life, having accomplished what you have, having close families, having close friends, engaged to amazing people. It's like almost like being at the top of like this beautiful mountain and it's looking down on life and on the world and stop and say, wow, like what a bracha you are. What a bracha my life is. What an amazing time of my life this is. Akala and friends and health and family. If that's like the mindset going into marriage, if that's the mindset under chuppah, if that's the mindset during Shana Rishona, it transforms your whole life. It's not about negativity, it's not about stress, it's not about anxiety, it's about just feeling sort of the shefa of the beauty of life, the beauty of the relationship, of marriage, of the opportunities. And hopefully that's something that is sort of like a guiding voice, that sense of shefa of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I wish all of you tremendous bracha. If at any point, either before the marriage or during marriage, or at any point I can ever be of any assistance, talk through some of these things or other things, so by all means let me know. It should be a real Shas Mazel and a wonderful period in front of you. Thank you, everyone.